Certainly, if you're going to plan some kind of attack, that would be a great time for communications to be down. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we talk about the internet going down. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next.
We're all gonna die.
Yes. Put your tinfoil hat on, dear listener. We're about to get all Chicken Little on yo. So, anybody who uses the web or the internet on a regular basis will know that recently there was a massive distributed denial of service attack on one of the, or perhaps the largest DNS provider on the internet, which caused a bunch of major sites, including Twitter, I think Pinterest, just a huge laundry list.
Yeah, a huge list. GitHub, Reddit.
Yeah. All of the sites became unreachable at their domain name. Which I was like, was Twitter down for anybody? Is it just me? I'm like, there's not even a fail whale.
Yeah.
It's been a while, but.
Yeah, no, everything was down. Technically not many things were down. Everything was unreachable.
Right. And I was like, I thought it was very cool that people started sharing IP addresses.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I suppose everybody listening to this show knows how this works, right?
Probably, but we should maybe.
Yeah, you want to do a
run through just in case.
Yeah, maybe do a, you're probably, you know, I'm sure you know more about it than I do. So, Kelly, how does DNS work?
DNS, when you type in a website URL in your browser or any other internet connected thing, the browser or other internet connected thing checks your nearest DNS server to see what IP address belongs to that URL.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you remember phone books, dear listener, it's kind of like, you know John Smith's name. So you look up in the phone book for John Smith's name and, oh, look, there's his number. So you can call him. Well, the internet browsers and other things do that for you automatically, where you type in the name, twitter.com, and comes back with a number.
And that number is the address for the server on the internet.
Mm-hmm. So, it can get sucked. I don't even know like how complicated we want to get. Like, it can get super complicated where that number is actually like, not the actual server. And probably for any of these services, it's a load balancer or something
like that. Load balancers or CloudFront endpoints or things like that. Yeah, I mean, it can get a lot more complicated than that, but in a nutshell.
Mm. And so this was the kind of, this technology is like a basic core original invention for the internet, right?
Yeah, this is one of the oldest internet protocols we have, I would say.
This makes sense, so I assume it was true, but I remember reading that the way that this used to work was that someone just had a file and they maintained a list of domain, you know, because it's much easier to remember twitter.com than, you know, whatever, 99.72.365.5. Actually, 365 wouldn't exist, but anyway, the idea is it's much easier to remember twitter.com than some long number. Mm-hmm. And so let's do that. But you need to have this lookup thing. So how are we going to do that? Well, let's just keep track of them in a text document. It was, if I remember correctly, it was literally one guy's server.
Just like a big host file.
Yeah, exactly. That's where host files come from, I believe. Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. So if you break that, and it's not inherently secure in any way, really.
No, DNS wasn't. I was reading some stuff from a friend of mine who used to work with a different DNS provider, not Dyn, but another one. And the protocol is apparently a fairly simple protocol, and it's not really designed with security at this type of scale in mind.
Yeah. And so here's basically, just to give folks an idea of what a DDoS attack is, or distributed denial of service attack, is that these lookups, so the person who's hosting this phone book of websites gets, you know, a whole bunch of traffic from, or someone sent, a hacker sends a whole bunch of traffic to a machine that does these lookups. Mm-hmm. Like so much traffic
that the machine can't keep up.
Can't keep up. And so it's just clogged. Basically, it's like a log jam on this machine and requests are stacking up. And normally what you'd be able to do if you're the person who's hosting the phone book machine, the DNS machine, normally you'd be able to say, oh, well, all the traffic coming from this source is it's clearly a hacker. So just ignore it, like shut it off, block it.
Yeah, just block it.
That's where the word distributed comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, another thing you can do in those situations is you can just say, oh, okay, we've got a lot of traffic. We need more servers to handle the lookup. And the same sort of thing we were talking about before, the load balancing and all that takes place on the DNS side of things so that they can scale up to meet the demand. But again, when you're talking about distributed, just the volume gets so large that even with that, the servers can't keep up.
Right. And it starts to get expensive. So because they, you know, they got to spin up more machines, and more machines means you got to pay somebody. Either these days you're probably not, provisioning your own physical machines. Certainly not automatically, but perhaps you are, or perhaps you're paying Amazon or some similar service to do that. But that costs money, and the reason that the word distributed is used here is because the hacker gets together or organizes what's called a botnet of thousands and thousands and thousands of machines, all with different IP addresses, all with different, address and phone numbers, right?
Yeah, they can literally be all over the world.
Yeah, everywhere. So there's no way to shut off traffic to any particular, like you could shut off traffic to a particular IP address, but, we saw one report where, there were 500,000 compromised devices potentially involved. So, how do you even?
Right.
So what ends up happening is, long story short, what ends up happening is someone who really doesn't need the sort of nation state level of funding. So just like a typical script kiddie.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a bored teenager.
Yeah. Can get together, like grab some open source software and get a botnet together and just take down their high school website. Whatever. So where it starts to get really freaky is, so let's just assume for a second that there's no, certainly right now, there's no obvious way to stop, what was one site listed was getting, 64 gigabytes per second of traffic? I mean, that's like bonkers. Like their server logs would fill up the hard drive in 1 second in some, you know what I mean? Like it's a crazy amount of traffic. No, sorry, here it is. 620 gigabytes per second. That's crazy.
That's a ridiculous amount.
That's more than the hard drive on the computer that I'm on right now.
Yeah,
that's
like that would...
twice as much per second.
That would fill up my hard drive in about like 1.5 seconds.
Yeah, my hard drive would be filled up in half a second. 500 milliseconds, my hard drive would be full.
Yeah, like even just storing the log file.
Right. And okay, So what does this mean? Like, what's the outcome of this? Okay, that's how it works. That's what's going on. And oh, by the way, it might be interesting to note that the source of all that traffic appeared to be mostly Internet of Things. So like DVRs and webcams that had horrible security, and there's no way to fix it and no way to even know that it's happening. My light bulbs in my house could have been part of this attack. I have no idea.
And you would never know.
How would I know? I wouldn't.
Yeah. And how many people have, like, let's say you say, okay, I want internet access, and some guy from the cable company or the phone company comes out and they set it up and they've got all of your default usernames and passwords on your router. And how many of you have gone in and changed that,
Yeah. And even worse, some of these things don't have a facility for you to change them because they're not back doors, but sort of like SSH or Telnet access into some of these devices that you don't have access to through like the mobile app that you use to set up your Philips Hue bridge or whatever, like the things on the internet and there's a way into it that is not user friendly at all.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily intentional vulnerabilities. It's just leftovers from developing and building the thing in the first place that people who probably aren't the most security conscious have just kind of left in place.
Yeah, because security is the opposite of convenience, and a lot of the friction with adoption for especially smart home Internet of Things type devices is that the setup is brutally difficult. Mm-hmm. So adding a lot of security to it is, with no direct benefit to the homeowner, is not good in terms of, you know, the number of stars you get in Amazon. Because it's, if something's a real pain to set up because it's incredibly secure, that's going to be a, that's going to equal pain to set up because the security doesn't accrue to the buyer. The security would accrue to the internet at large.
Yeah. And a lot of the buyers are, a lot of people that buy this type of stuff, we like to think we're all nerds and buying these gadgets. But as they become more and more widespread and more adopted, you're going to have people buying them that are less tech savvy. And they're not going to understand the need for the security, and they're not going to care, and they certainly don't want to have to deal with it. They just want to be able to plug the thing in and have it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I suppose maybe people would feel a little bit differently about that if it was like your water heater or your furnace or your oven that was connected, and there'd be probably some, or your car. The, you know, people are just naturally going to have more of a concern about that kind of a thing because of the potential for disaster.
Real risk of injury.
Yeah, because then the security.
Yeah.
Yep. Because then the security benefits do accrue to the purchaser. But for something like a light bulb, like what, like really what's going to happen? Somebody might change my light bulb from white to red.
You know? Yeah, we did a podcast, I think it was a niche podcast a long time ago, about someone hacking Hue light bulbs. And we were both like, yeah, what's the big deal? So it gets dark. I go over and flip a switch.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
there might be more to it than that.
Yeah, if somebody takes over the brakes on your car, that's different.
Yeah, or if somebody uses the bridge for your light bulbs to attack a DNS server.
Yeah, exactly. So security researchers are just putting out volumes of really interesting information about this, and it's a little doomsday-ish because they're like, you know, this can't be fixed. The only way to fix this is to take these things offline, which isn't going to happen. So,
yeah,
you know, so
you
until
need a massive product recall.
Right, which isn't going to happen. So, you know, what can you do? And you know, honestly, to skim the headlines and even read a couple of the articles, it's kind of like, well, there's nothing you can do. We just need to get used to it.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, well, I don't know. What can you do?
You know, I started to say you could maybe beef up the DNS protocol, but that doesn't stop the issue of the sheer volume of traffic.
Mm.
Even if you make the protocols themselves more secure, they're still going to, they can't deny, they can't block people from accessing.
Right. It defeats the whole purpose.
You know, yeah. It defeats the whole purpose.
Like authenticated traffic, because that's what you'd need is authenticated mm-hmm. traffic. You know, we need to know who you are before you knock on the door. And that would destroy the whole concept of the web. It just can't work.
Yeah, that's not how the internet works.
No, it's how Facebook works, but it's not how the overall internet works. So that would be unimplementable in, you know, point of fact. And so a lot of security researchers, well, at least one or two that we've read, are calling for, you know, like United Laboratories to set standards that have to be adhered to by IoT device manufacturers. And I'm like, yeah, that wouldn't be bad, but that's not going to solve the problem. It's the horse out of the barn.
Yeah, we've already got 500,000 devices out there, and I read that bit about the thing like the Underwriters Laboratories having a similar certification for IoT devices that says yes, this is a secure device, and they were saying, and then people could look for the seal, and you'd have to educate them to look for the seal, but eventually they would know to, and I'm going, okay, the UL Laboratory seal has been around as long as I can remember, and I know what it means, but never once have I looked for it when purchasing a product.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's just a thing that's there and no one really cares.
Yeah, it's just another, that glob of labeling, that just like gook that's on
it's
everything.
Another sticker to peel off.
Right. So there needs to be some other, I don't know if we're going to get into like, okay, what are the approaches? But there needs to be some kind of approach. Like, I don't know, dynamic IP, who knows? You know, there are smarter people than certainly me, mm-hmm. I'm sure, working on this, toiling incessantly on this. But I think the more interesting thing to think about is like, okay, what are the ramifications of this capability where like pretty much any kid that could program a Minecraft mod, you know, like somebody who has like that level of capability,
mm-hmm.
could go to GitHub and get whatever, a bot virus, and take control of, you know, a bunch of baby monitors and take down Twitter. So why would anybody do that? Because I saw, you know, Bruce Schneier, who's a very, very famous security researcher, he contends that someone is testing the capability of taking down not just sites but the entire internet, because it's happened. There are a couple of instances recently that have been more than double the size attack of anything previous.
You think we're going to see an attack at some point that just takes down the entire internet?
Yeah, that's timed to coincide with some major event. So,
well, Election Day is only a
exactly
week away.
Exactly what I'm thinking too. Like U.S. elections are coming a week from today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Today, tomorrow, today, today's Tuesday.
Yeah, they will have passed by the time this podcast goes up.
That's true. So we'll know if we were right or not, or if they were right or not. But there, it was a news story, a big news story during the Obama Romney campaign, which that was a pretty close campaign. They were polling very mm-hmm. close on Election Day, and the Romney IT infrastructure collapsed, which could have easily cost him the election. It easily that one thing, if it had gone the other way, could have won him the election.
Yeah, you know? and there's been more debate and more controversy around cybersecurity and that sort of thing during this election and leading up to this election than there ever has. There's
yeah, that's true.
The deleted emails, the leaks from WikiLeaks, the supposed connection between Trump servers and Russia, and there's been a lot more of it.
Mm, absolutely. Sure. I mean, well, it's just natural. Like, as more of our mm-hmm. meat-based lives go online, the more we outsource our brains to the cloud, the more value there is there. And therefore, it needs to be, you know, it's worth stealing. In other words, like, so there's something there that's valuable. So it's worth stealing. It's worth protecting. And it's sort of out there hanging in the breeze. And even something as stupidly simple as just flooding a core piece of the internet with traffic, you know, it's kind of like World War Z when you just like zombies are just like crawling on top of other zombies to get over the castle walls, so to speak.
Yeah, these are not like DDoS attacks. They're not really smart. It doesn't take a mastermind to do them. You're not trying to do something incredibly clever.
Mm.
You're just banging on a server repeatedly and constantly.
Yeah, it's like hitting something with 1,000 hammers. It's like a brute force dumb attack that actually happens to be kind of effective.
Right. It's not hacking. You're not hacking any. Well, I suppose you're hacking things to build your botnet in the first place. But the actual attack, it's not the same as you're hacking and trying to break into something. You're just flooding it with too much traffic.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so timed appropriately or aimed at the right thing, it amounts to, I mean, there's all sorts of really critical, you know, issues like the election that could happen, you know, or, you know, certainly if you're going to plan some kind of attack, that would be a great time for communications to be down, you know, which more and more our communications are IP based. And if that includes, let's just say the DNS system, then like all of a sudden, geez, you know, do we have a backup in place? I guess, but you know, like Kelly and I work together when we're not podcasting.
Yes.
And there was, I can think of one time when Slack went down, which was like that's what we use for all our company communications.
And it was just kind of like, well, okay, everyone take the day off.
Right. It's like, do I even have anybody's phone number? No. Like people I've been working with for 4 years, I don't have their phone number. I don't even know if I have your phone number.
I have yours.
All right, there we go. So I think it's a little bit scary, because if someone was clever and timed this appropriately, they could change the course of an election. They could increase the impact of some sort of, you know, horrible terrorist attack. There's all sorts of, they could take down a particular, you know, let's say a newspaper website or
a SpaceX launch.
Yeah. I mean, it's the concept of DNS, you know, DNS is like baked into just a crazy amount of stuff. I mean, I have to imagine that it's just one of those things that you just say, well, okay, this name is going to resolve properly. I'm going to bake it into the code. And it's extremely useful. It's like it's not just a convenience, because it allows you to change phone numbers, basically, you know, change machines out from behind your website.
Yeah. And I mean, just pointing to an IP, you could say this domain name points to this IP address, and that's fine. But there may also be 40 or 50 other domain names that point to the same IP address. So there's more to it than just here's your domain name, here's your IP.
That's true.
We can rely on those domain names as part of their configuration for how the servers work and respond to things.
Right. Yeah. Because you can serve multiple domain names off the same physical machine. That's true. Yeah. I didn't even think of that. So it's not necessarily true. In other words, you can't necessarily just change to the IP address because that might not work. The web server might not be listening for that.
You'd have to do the host's file thing.
Mm-hmm. So actually, that is a perfect segue into what could be done about this, because the prevention's too late. Like that, mm-hmm. maybe in 2 decades, that'll be sussed out. But come on, 2 decades, we're going to be flying cars by then. So right. Like these products are going to be connected to the internet for a long time. So like in my mind, I read this book a while back. I think it was Black Swan, but it might not have been, but regardless, it was about the idea of preventing cyber attacks. The approach isn't the author, who's like a big time security guy. He's like, the approach isn't to stop it. You can't stop it. There's no way you're going to be able to stop it.
You can't.
The thing that you need to do is become resilient to them. So have yourself set up in such a way that you've got backup plans and so on and so forth. So that when it does, because it will happen, not all the time, but you know, it's like power going out. We have backup plans.
Yeah, that just kind of seems like you're fighting a losing battle, though.
So here's the thing, though: if you can have enough of a backup plan in place that the effect of the attack is dramatically minimized, or at least significantly minimized, it's mm-hmm. less interesting to do the attack in the first place.
That's true. I suppose it is less interesting to do the attack in the first place. It becomes a lot more costly
mm-hmm.
to have that backup plan in place. The funny thing is, when all of these attacks were going on with Dyn, I was able to get around them and continue work as normal because it was right at the start of Ruby Rampage, and GitHub and Heroku and all that were all unreachable.
Mm, bad timing. Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe
they didn't want Ruby Rampage to go on.
Someone was blocking me. And the way I got around it was I set up OpenDNS as my DNS servers of choice. And the reason OpenDNS still worked was because they don't honor the time to live in the protocol. So nothing was refreshing as quickly as it should have. So everything was still.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Resolving. Yeah. Yeah, it worked because it didn't follow the protocol.
Interesting. So here's the thing, right? It's like I don't want to get too technical. I was about to go into like a deeply technical conversation about like your registrar, but never mind that. The other thing that you brought up, though, is you mentioned the hosts file earlier. And the thing about the DNS concept is that it grew organically. And even though it's not secure in the sense that there's, you know, there's no authentication mechanism to identify the incoming traffic, it does have multiple layers.
Yeah, there's a lot of redundancy.
Yes. And at different point, like different layers. So you could switch to a different phone book, basically. You just said, don't use mm-hmm. that one over there. Use this one.
Yeah, which is what I did.
Right. And you can also put one locally on your machine. So, you know, web developers probably know this, but the average person won't, where you can just sort of make your own local version of this, which is literally a list in a text document that your browser is set up to look for.
Yeah, it'll look for it before it looks at anything else.
Yes, and that it has priority over everything else. So it says, first, when I type twitter.com into my web browser, the first thing it checks is this file on my hard drive that's literally called hosts. And inside of that file, if it finds, twitter.com mm-hmm. with an IP address next to it, it's gonna say, okay, for whatever reason, he wants to go to this IP address. And, you know, whatever it says on the internet, be damned.
Yeah.
So I was like, that to me, that's like a really cool plan B, where people have backup hosts files. So first of all, probably would be have to be an application that was distributed to people, and they, you know, if something like this happens, then through some communication mechanism, peer to peer style, either over the internet or the phone or in person, whatever, it's just like, oh, just run this program,
It's going to get the latest version of the host file that has all the addresses.
Right. So,
like the top 300 most popular websites or whatever.
Or the ones that you've been going to. So, we were talking about this. Like, could I check my router to see if the IP addresses for the sites that, like, literally every site that's been browsed to in my house? It's probably kind of a scary list.
Yeah.
But, you know, could I go in there and find the current IP address or the most recent IP address for those things and put it in my host file and just, like, you know, it's an inefficient way to do it because it's much smarter to have those, you know, in one sense, to have those centrally located. But that efficiency becomes an efficiency for a hacker. So,
yeah, I ran into a problem with doing that, though, because at first I was just putting a bunch of IP addresses in my host file.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be able to get to the sites, but nothing on them would work because all of their assets were served through something like CloudFront, which is, you know, a different IP address every time it's accessed, maybe.
Yes. So my vision for a potential solution is that your browser keeps track of the IP addresses as it's going along, because it knows what network requests it's making.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not normally saved. So I'm imagining like a Chrome browser extension or something that, at least in your, you know, for your web traffic, because of course there's a ton of other kind of traffic that emanates from your devices, whether phones, laptops, whatever. But if it did, like, I don't know, it'd probably be too huge. I don't know how large this would be. But if it's stored locally, like the mapping,
like cached the DNS mappings for like the last 72 hours or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is, it kind of in your history, but it also just happened to keep track of the IP addresses where all the assets were located. That would cover a lot of bases.
Probably would.
I don't know how large that file would be, and there's probably some severe security implications.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Implications there. But assuming that it was like a local file, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you'd probably say like, oh, okay, if you were in, you know, if your browser was in incognito, you wouldn't, you know, it'd just be just like history, but it would include IP addresses.
Right, right.
And network assets.
There's probably some really good reason why that won't work.
Mm.
That we're not smart enough to understand.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Or maybe we just solved it. Yeah, I mean, maybe. Even if you said, okay, like, you don't want that running on each computer, it would be kind of an interesting feature to add to a router. Or that makes me a little bit nervous, though, because I'm sure the ISP has access to the router. I know they have access to the router.
Yeah.
But they already know what traffic you need.
They already know. It's already going through your ISP anyway.
So. Right, right. So, the idea of having, the idea that the source of this kind of thinking comes from reading that book. I think it was Black Swan.
But sounds familiar.
Yeah, that was a pretty popular book, but I think I read two books at the same time. There's Black Swan and one with a less memorable name, but I'll put it in the show notes because I remember what it looks like. And the solution is to you know, from a physical defense standpoint, it's kind of like militias. Like how do you get your neighborhood on a local, like on a LAN almost, like, you know, how would you share this? You'd literally go to your neighbor's houses and be like, hey, do you need a host file? Got a host file for you. Want it?
You know, hand it to him on a thumb drive.
Yeah, exactly. And just pass it around and be like, okay, now my neighborhood's back online. And then they can connect with their network of friends, sure, the entire communications grid could be down. But at that point, it'd be easier to just knock out the electricity, you know, because... Right? Like, because then, okay, there we go.
Yeah, still, this all sounds highly, highly inefficient.
That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Because it makes it really hard, really hard to mess with. Because people did work, you know?
Yeah.
It's not central. It's like all totally peer-to-peer.
Yeah, the solution to avoiding being affected by DNS or DDoS attacks on DNS services is not to rely on the DNS services.
Mm. Actually, I wonder if this would work. Hey, dear listener, you're perhaps smarter than we are and you can figure this out. But I was imagining I'm sure everyone's familiar with the concept of a computer virus.
Mm-hmm.
I was imagining a computer vaccine that's passed the same way, that is not like a wall of defenses, like a firewall or like Norton antivirus, blah, blah, blah. But like a piece of, what's the opposite of malware? Like proware, like good, like
I don't know. I don't think there is an opposite.
Yummyware. that secretly propagates like a virus and installs itself on all of these computers in case, until the day when it cannot reach what, like Google and Facebook and Twitter simultaneously, none of them resolve, and it springs into action and it has been tracking your, you know.
what you're wanting is a viral antivirus.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Vaccine was the only word I could think of.
Yeah.
It's not, vaccines aren't viral. It would be if you could sneeze a cure onto someone, then it would be like that. Like a virus that is from white hat hackers that goes around and secretly installs itself and springs into action in the event of something.
Or just removes any other malware that it detects.
Well, see, I'm afraid of that because that's what these things do, and they don't seem to work. I want something that is like in a particular scenario like this one, that you're like, oh, all of these computers, these hundreds of millions or billions of computers are infected with the cure for a DDoS or a, you know, like, oh, do like every machine actually hosts every site on the internet.
Yeah, I think that just became incredibly impractical.
Yeah. Okay, sure. I'm overstepping bounds.
Yeah,
you're kind of overstating
things a bit there.
Or like everything redirects to the Wayback Machine in the event of a. So who knows? I think it is interesting because it brings up all sorts of, you know, cyber attacks in general, I think, are getting more and more real and more everyday, or affecting the everyday person.
I think they are. And for me, the most interesting part about this was it was all orchestrated through Internet of Things devices.
Mm.
And an open source virus through unsecure Internet of Things devices, which, like you said, they're not going to go away. And I don't even really know how much something like this attack is going to make their manufacturers stop and think about security.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's going to have a big impact like we would all, you know, like I wish it would.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's going to. And there's a really cool visualization, live map that shows cyber attack map that we can link to in the show notes. It's probably one of my favorite sites on the internet.
Mm. Yeah, if you can get to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was down for a while during the DNS outage, and I was really sad.
Yeah, it would have been the best time to see it. I wonder if they can, like, play it back, if there's, like, recordings.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, it's really cool. And every time I pull it up, I just like to go full screen and pretend like I'm some, I don't know, NSA anti-terrorist operative or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It makes you feel very... I don't know. It feels very sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's like these are the cyber attacks that are happening around the world right now.
Yeah, like you're in some kind of situation room.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn my hue lights red.
I was just gonna say, do you tell your lights to turn red?
Yeah, of course.
DEFCON 5, Alexa. DEFCON 5.
Yeah, it's like I'm in a submarine and looking. At, yeah.
Yeah. That reminds me of The Last Ship. Good show. Anyway, all right. I think we've solved all those problems. It's all set now.
Now that we've fixed the internet.
Yeah.
Let's go have lunch.
Go us. Agreed. Definitely. All right. I'm going to go DDoS a sandwich.
Yeah, me too. Attack it from both corners.
That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of two friends who would dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds, if you can reach them. If you don't have two friends, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review on iTunes. Thanks.